Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 65 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. We're back after quite a hiatus. We haven't had a Footmarks podcast in a while. And the title of this one is The Route to Greatness, pun intended. And it's on, you guessed it, the greatness of Joe Root, his rise to the top, and projections regarding where he'll end up in terms of both stature and run tally, and whether that tally will surpass that of the great Sachin Tendulkar in Test cricket. Now, to kick off this conversation, Jared, let's dial it back to exactly a decade ago when the late, great Martin Crowe coined the term Fab Four. At that point, Root averaged, you know, better than Kohli, Smith and Williamson, and his average was just above 50. Fast forward 6 years from that point on, and there were many fans and even pundits who questioned Root's inclusion in the Fab Four. I remember Akash Chopra, you know, making a big deal out of this. And it all seems a bit crazy now, doesn't it?
Yeah, also, I mean, not having a go at Akash or anyone else, but it's like, it's a made-up club that we come, like, how could he not be in the club that was made up for him? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like taking Mickey Mouse out of the Mickey Mouse club at a certain point. Like, you're no longer a Beatle. I think it shows you that over a period of time, and probably because of the way the internet news cycles work now, like, kind of, there's always going to be a moment when a player is not going to be doing all that well. And as a cricket society, as a, you know, as a group, we're always going to look at that and try and find the person who's next out or struggling or whatever that may be. And in truth, like, I think that probably tells you more about us as a society at the moment than anything else. But he also wasn't playing that good, right? Like, I was looking it up the other day, well, for this piece actually, but just in general, I've been looking it up quite a bit. We did I did another thing about where he fits in the great England batters of all time as well. And you know, there is a bit in his late 20s where he kind of isn't starring the way you would expect Joe Root to star. And he was fine for a normal batter, just not for, you know, an international test player, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand the reservations because if you look at Joe Root's career from his debut game versus India in December 2012 in Nagpur to the end of 2020, Root had scored 17 test tons and he had the lowest 100 tally and batting average amongst the Fab Four, right? He was 3 runs shy of 50 when it comes to average. And since then, he has scored 17 more tons in a period where the combination of Smith, Kohli and Williamson have scored the same number of hundreds. Furthermore, Root now once again averages north of 50 in test cricket. And how about that for a turnaround, right? Especially when your conversion rate has been a major point of contention in the past.
Yeah, it's no one ever really got the conversion thing. And I remember, I think it might have been me and Andy Zaltzman during the sort of the prime of it. We're doing a podcast together and we were kind of trying to work out if making a 50 every innings is like an averaging 50 is like a good career. Do you know what I mean? Like it was, because so many people were like, you know, this isn't good enough. And when it comes down to it, I think someone did some research for me and they suggested that if you make a 50, your team is 5% more likely to win. And if you make 100, it's 12%. So 100 does even, you know, and it might be over 75 where the difference comes in rather than, you know, wherever. But there is a big step up at a certain point. But it is crazy to think that he went from that when... that my theory was always the same. It's just like he's so good at scoring runs and he does it so effortlessly. How come he keeps getting in this tangle afterwards? Like it's not a technical thing at that point because you can't consistently make 50 if you've got technical issues. And then to go from that to here is maybe just one of those things. I remember Michael Clark. Yeah, I think it was Michael Clark. I had a real trouble with making 100 and getting out straight away, which is a slightly different issue, but very similar. And Michael Clark told Steve Smith early on, he said, don't aim for 100, aim for 150. So if you get to 150, then you sell, that's your big celebration. That's the one that matters. And sometimes these sorts of little tricks that we play on our own brains work. And I wonder if Root has just come up with a different model of that of, well, 50s don't count anymore, right? Making a 50 doesn't doesn't change anything at all. And I might have told this story before, but when I was a kid, we had to retire at 50.
Yeah.
Back to back. And then I played in a game where I hit two boundaries in a row. One was clearly my 50 and the other one was us winning the game, but I didn't know. So I just kept backing. And it was the first time after the retirements when I hadn't gone out the ball after 50 or with the score on 50. You get in that sort of mindset, and professional players do it. You know, I've had professional players say to me that, like, you know, this causes an issue and that causes an issue. Do you remember Shane Watson? He would get to like 35, right, off like 25 balls, 30 balls in a test match, and then not be able to score for like hours on end. Like, you know, everyone gets in these different patterns, and obviously Root has somehow flipped this pattern completely, and it's such a bizarre situation to be in, to go from not being able to score hundreds at all to only scoring hundreds, right? Like, yeah. I mean, what a dramatic turnaround that is.
Yeah, I mean, you once told me that the late great Don Bradman used to say that the first 50 runs are the hardest, right? Well, for Root, for the longest time, the next 50 runs were the hardest. And just to add a bit more to the conversion rate debate, right? Root had scored 100 only 26% of the time he scored 50 plus till 2020. And then he has more than doubled that percentage since to 53%. The first 17 tons of his career came in 97 tests and the next 17 came in 48. So statistically, he has been twice as good, Jared, in the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a kind of movement that we would probably have expected him to make around 28. Right. And he's probably started to do it a little bit later. So maybe he developed a little bit later than other great batters do. And, you know, perhaps Virat matured earlier and Root matured later. Like, we've got to factor all those things in. And it might be as simple as that. I remember Avinav Mukund, when I had him on the podcast, and he said the big thing he found in Test cricket was the difference between Test cricket and first class cricket was once you made 50 in first class cricket, it was really on you to make 100, which is kind of how Bradman would have seen things, right? And what he was saying is, in Test cricket, that never happens because there is never that moment where you're relaxed, right? Or, you know, there's always a good bowler bowling to you. There's always, you know, a plan that's been set specifically for you, you know, by analysts, by coaches, by bowlers, whatever, because they've seen you a lot at that point and everything else. And I wonder if, you know, all that sort of stuff played a part in Root struggling. And then as he's reached his prime, there aren't really a lot of weaknesses left in his game, right? Yeah. And so where do you go? I think it was it the Sri Lankan players were saying a couple of weeks ago, you know, what is the issue? Where do you bowl to him, right? And, you know, I went through all the MV play footage and, you know, looking for like an obvious flaw. And the one thing he started doing is sort of going across his stumps quite a bit. And they were like, especially in the West Indies series, there was a lot of half LBW appeals, right, for balls slipping down leg side. And he's basically mastered the fact that if you, even walking across his stumps, if it's on leg stump even, he'll hit it. And if it just slips down, then occasionally he loses his balance. So even his mistakes are like perfectly in line. So what are you attacking at that point, right? You can't bowl spin to him, can't really bowl pace to him, you can't keep him on strike. And maybe it was just all those skills getting to that sort of, as we said before, that maturity level is taking it to the next one. But I mean, these are the sorts of questions. I wonder if Joe Root could answer them. Because the amount of times for my book, I talked to a player about this sort of stuff and they just looked at me and went, I don't know what changed.
Right. We'll come to his skill set later. Right now, I want to obsess a little bit over his numbers. And considering England play an awful lot of Test cricket, it's not surprising that Root is, you know, on top of the run scoring charts when it comes to the Fab Four, despite the fact that he was the last batter to debut in Test cricket out of the Fab Four. And, you know, while it is all believable, considering the volume of games, Root is nearly 3,000 runs clear of Steve Smith in second place as of today. And that is quite wild.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, you know, Smith would be further up if he hadn't have suspended himself, right? Like, so I suppose Smith would be the closer one. I think we all know just how much cricket England play and also the consistency of the scoring of Joe Root, like those two things coming together. I think we have to get used to emotionally England players having big counting stats. And I remember I was talking to a friend recently and he was saying, you know, where do you fit this bowler in? Where do you fit this bowler in? And he said, like, do you have Stuart Broad in the top five bowlers of all time? And I was like, no. And he was like, what do you mean? Yeah. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, he's got this many wickets. And I went, yeah, I think it's a phenomenal record. I think Stuart Broad did brilliantly to be able to bowl that many times to take that many test wickets. But that doesn't mean he's the fifth best bowler of all time. It means he had availability that Dale Steyn didn't get, right? Yeah. Like, no one, Stuart Broad doesn't think he's a better bowler than Dale Steyn, right? Like, and it's a bit the same with Joe Root. Like, he's going to end up with the numbers. And I was actually looking at this. What's Smith's number at the moment?
9,600 and something.
Yeah. And Williamson and Coley are both under 9,000 or around 9,000?
They're still in the 8,000s.
There's a possibility that neither of them passes 10,000 runs. Right?
I mean, like, Smith will, for sure.
No. The other two, Williamson and Coley. And I think they both will, because I think they want to. I think Williamson has already had his chance to retire. But the point being is, like, they're on the verge of just getting to 10,000 runs. Maybe they'll just get over it, right? And Root has skipped past it at such a rate that he can't even remember what scoring 10,000 runs was like. Like, it does show you just the amount of matches difference that these guys all have. And Williamson could have a longer career than Root in terms of years and never get anywhere near him in terms of runs. You know, they're living in a completely different society to each other.
Yeah. I mean, that is the sad reality of cricket, I suppose. And of course, the sheer volume of cricket that England plays has a role to play. But then Root has been consistently good for that sheer volume as well. So, I mean, it kind of goes both ways. Sure, he plays a lot of cricket, but he's been good all the while. And if you look at his numbers, you know, versus the rest of the world since the start of 2021, which is his golden period, Root is roughly 2,000 runs ahead of the next best batter, which is Usman Khawaja. And only Jaiswal and Williamson average more than him. Now, if you add the fact, Jared, that Root has upped his strike rate in this period, reverse ramping every 17th delivery, you know, I'm making this up, but I'm sure the number is something like that. Yeah. That achievement becomes all the more phenomenal.
Yes, I think you're right. I think at that point, I think that's maybe the most interesting thing of generally players of his age and his skill set are batting slower than they've ever batted before. Right. And it's not even close. Like, you know, most players generally, you know, pare their game back and just do the, I don't want to say the bare necessity, but they just do what they have to do to consistently score runs. And he's gone completely the other way. Now, part of that is just because of the team and everything else. We have to give him the credit because the star players don't usually do that. And then when you add that strike rate into that record, it's like, it's even more crazy, right? Like, and he does seem to be playing with a sense of freedom with it. I know that still every time he plays a bad shot, you know, he gets crucified for one of these reverse whatevers. We get that and we understand that. But there is an element of it's working and he's batting at a level that we haven't seen him bat at. Now, some of that started beforehand, of course. It started from the Sri Lanka series onwards. But it's not like he's got worse. And you know, I kept looking at his record when he was getting crucified for some of those attacking shots going, missing something? Like, he's still really good. So I think it's phenomenal to be able to do that at that age. Really, I can't think of too many players who've done that, unless it's a player who's like on the verge of being dropped and it's suddenly just like, okay, well, if I'm going to finish my career, I'm not going to finish my career as a nudger. I'm going to go back and play with a sense of freedom. That obviously wasn't the case for Joe Root, right?
Yeah. And if anything, I feel like Bazball helped him unlock his batting talents even more. And now that he's not really, you know, under that sort of pressure that he's the one who has to take England's score forward and is the backbone, it's kind of freed him up a bit, right? And of course, now I think it's probably the time that we need to address the Tendulkar question as well. You and I have been speaking about this for a while, right? Whether or not Joe Root can overtake the Little Masters test run tally. And at the end of the English summer, right now, basically, Joe Root is still over 100 days away from his 34th birthday. And he is 3,519 runs shy of Sachin. Jared, that figure was 4,000 not too long ago when we were discussing this, right? And England play a fuck ton of test cricket. So this could be realistic.
If you are following my work, we know that you are a true cricket sadist. And you need your hit every day. And sometimes, sadly, there is actually no cricket to watch. So how about if someone made a very fun game that you could use for the moments when there is no on-field action?
Welcome to Hit Wicket, a strategic game of cricket, which isn't about slamming your finger on the screen very fast. You work out what works best based on how cricket actually works. Dot balls lead to wickets, ones and twos to fours and sixes. So there is no way you can bowl a great Yorker every ball or smash three sixes at the beginning of your innings. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some gaming powers in there as well. Hit Wicket is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, and captain. It's your dream. No ads, just cricket. So download Hit Wicket today, because this is a cricket game made for you and supported by major cricket nerds.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many different elements to go to it. I think I did a podcast with Bumble about it, and it's like, I think the most important one is, does he want to do it? Do you know what I mean? Like, I know that sounds silly, but I did an article on AB de Villiers during his last IPL season, where I was like, AB de Villiers could be the first player who plays onto 42, 43 at a high level, right? Not the MS Dhoni level, but like where there isn't that much lost from his game. He's only going to be playing a little bit of cricket. He's an incredible professional. He's probably one of the best athletes we've ever had. And there's now enough money to keep him on the field if you want to. And we've already seen that with Jimmy Anderson, right? But AB de Villiers was like, I'm done. I don't need to do that, right? And Jimmy Anderson was the opposite.
And AB was like, you know, not winning a World Cup does not define me. That is not my legacy. And he had made peace with that. Whereas Jimmy, if you told him to carry on for another 4 years, he probably would have.
Exactly. And there's clearly, so, you look at that and you look at people like, you know, Courtney Walsh is a really good example of just someone who just had to bowl, right? Like that was just his whole personality. Sachin, we were talking about before. And, you know, Yunus Khan was another one. Like those are people who just have to be out there. That's what they do, right? Like it, and that's the thing we have never really seen from Root. He's a fantastic player, but he plays cricket rather than it being the thing that defines him. And so I suppose the best way of putting it, where is he on the Alistair Cook, Jimmy Anderson spectrum, right? Of like, Alistair Cook had a couple of bad years, things weren't going the way he wanted, and he's just like, I'm just going to go play counter cricket and have some fun, right? And do some commentary.
On my farm. He was a big farm guy as well, right?
I think it's more of a hobby farm, but yeah, he's got a farm, he's got animals and stuff. Where does Root sort of sit on that? And that was the question that me and Bumble were talking about quite a bit of, you know, I did a project a few years ago that was going to be partnering with Joe Root that didn't quite come to fruition. And you know, the guys were saying to me at the time, look, he loves his cricket, obviously. But if we offered him like a golf podcast or a golf video show, like he would prefer to do that. Like that, and that's not slagging off cricket. He just would prefer to talk about golf. Like if Joe Root could go around the world and talk to all the best golfers on a podcast, that would probably be his ideal retirement project, right? Like playing golf with famous people and asking them about golf, right? Like no one's slagging that off. Like you like what you like at a certain point, yeah? That isn't Sachin Tendulkar. Sachin Tendulkar, you know, I think Rahul Dravid said for my book that it was like, he did everything. He based his whole life around, how can I make my next run?
Yeah.
That's so different to someone like Joe Root. So at the moment at 34, everyone's like, well, he just keeps going at this rate and everything else. And it's like, but he won't go at this rate. He will probably have another period where he dips. He might have a period where the England team start losing. He might have a period where he suddenly is the oldest player by a considerable distance. And he looks around and goes, I don't want to be the old guy with all the young guys. Do you know, we have no idea, you know, children, job opportunities, all these sorts of things that can come. You know, one thing I would say for Root is I don't think he's like business savvy in a way of, I'm trying to think of another cricketer, like, I don't know, Aravinda De Silva, right? Like, you know, one of those like proper business head people. But we know that Joe Root owns all these different things. Like, doesn't he own like cricket grounds in Spain or Portugal or something weird? He owns the Barmy Army, right? Yeah. Like all these different things that Joe Root owns. He's actually quite well set up into the future in a way that, you know, a lot of other very good players were not. He might just be like, well, I've done. So it's a very different situation to Sachin, where I think up until the point at which Sachin obviously set himself some goals, right? Like, you know, I want to play this many tests. I want to make this many hundreds, you know, all that sort of stuff. I don't think any of us see Root as that sort of dude, right? Like, and so he's 35 and he wakes up one day and his ankle hurts. right? And he goes out to play and he gets through, but his ankle hurts. And then the next day his ankle hurts. Then a month later his ankle hurts. He gets an operation and he's out for 2 months, comes back and his ankle starts hurting again. He might just leave, right? Like, and that's the thing that people just discount because, you know, people just like look at, oh, look what he's doing at the moment. It's like, yeah, he's going through a purple patch at the moment. He's going to drop form. He's never really had any injuries. He might start to get injuries as he gets older. You know, all these sorts of things can happen.
Yeah. On the hunger bit, of course, Ricky Ponting also weighed in and he believes that if Root plays till age 37, he will, you know, surpass Sachin Tendulkar. And that will, of course, depend on his hunger. But as you've mentioned, you know, Root may have some business interests and he sometimes prefers talking about golf rather than batting. And he doesn't also don't obsess...
I don't think the 37 thing's right, is it? Because of the amount of, even of the amount of tests they play. Yeah. How many tests has he played at the moment off the top of your head?
140-something.
So he would have to play 60 test matches in 4 years for Ricky Ponting to be right.
Yeah, that's true.
Or 3.5 years. So I don't even, do you know what I mean? And I understand why Ponting said, I'm not saying Ponting sat down with a schedule in front of him. And yeah, do you know what I mean? But it's not 37 where he'll be passing Sachin. It's, and if it was 37, I reckon I'd be a little bit more, he could probably make it to 37 even, you know, he's not going to get dropped, right? Like they haven't found another batter anything like him since he came on the scene. He's not getting dropped. So we don't have to worry about that. If he's averaging, if he's really bad and he averages 40, he's still going to average more than guys like Bairstow and Stokes and other top order players they've had. So it's not going to be an issue.
I mean, of course. So
he could play on, but it's going to have to be beyond 37. And I reckon it's beyond 37. It's 38, 39, 40 when your body really starts to change as an athlete.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I mean, you could be right about all of these things. And maybe one day Joe Root wakes up and the hunger is gone or his ankle is hurting or it's something that just doesn't feel right in his body. And he's like, you know what, let's call it a day. But maybe, Jared, breaking Sachin's record, that could prove to be motivation as well. We have to look at that side of things.
Yeah. And we've never really seen him as that sort of a person. It doesn't mean he isn't, because I would say probably of the four of them, he's the one we know the least about kind of personally. Like, as in, I don't mean that in a, like, he's a guarded way or anything, but you look at Kane Williamson, and I think we get a pretty strong sense of who Kane Williamson is, right? He maybe from New Zealand and doesn't get as much press as the other three. But everyone kind of knows Kane Williamson. I'll put it this way. Kane Williamson has a very, very strong brand built around the sort of person he is, right? Steve Smith, you know, the whatever it is, the compulsive disorder side of things and, you know, the being in the middle of a hotel at 4 a.m. practicing his bat and all that. Like, we get a really strong view of him. And Virat Kohli.
You could look at Williamson as the nice guy, Steve Smith as the guy reborn from being a win-at-all-costs person to someone who just loves to bat, and Kohli is the ultimate competitor, you know, in your face, and wants to win.
And so where do you put Root? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's as strong a side of it. And I feel like Ben Stokes, we've had documentaries on Ben Stokes. Mm. We've had books about Ben Stokes. We've had opinions. Everyone kind of knows who Ben Stokes is. And Jimmy Anderson was certainly someone who was right there. And Stuart Broad, you know, even Alistair Cook. Root, I just feel like, you know, he was the cheeky chappy when he was young. He gets his job done and he's professional and he's easygoing.
Gets punched by Davey Warner, doesn't make a fuss.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what drives him outside the fact that he's really good at this thing. And that if I knew what drove him one way or another, I'd be like, he could beat Sachin or he might not. But I don't think it's as straightforward with him as it is with some of the other people. And, you know, I used to do this thing, especially on Cricket Info, if I was writing a feature on someone, like, what's the thing that gets him out of bed in the morning, right? Because that's a really important one. And I remember, if you go back and read the Alistair Cook piece, I actually wrote about the fact that I thought the thing that got him out of bed in the morning was that he was told as a kid that he was going to be the future England captain, and he internalized that, and then he got there. Then when he got there, it wasn't quite the job that he wanted, right? He wasn't quite as good at that job as he thought.
Yeah.
The captaincy disappears and he leaves because I thought that was the thing that got him out of bed in the morning. Now, I might have stumbled onto that, and there's a few other things that happened, you know, and sometimes you're half right and you're half wrong at the same time. But the point being is, for most people, you can kind of see that kind of progression and you can work out what it is. I'm not sure we have it for Root. And I think if you're going to break this record and bat into your late 30s, that has to be there. It doesn't mean that it isn't there. and that we don't know what it is. It could be as simple as he likes winning test matches and likes playing in test matches. I know there are plenty of guys who kind of remind me of Root, who are, they're competitive guys and they're very skillful and they play a lot of first class cricket or franchise cricket these days. And they'll just be like, I just like being a professional cricketer, right? Like I like getting ready in the morning, doing this job, knowing what it is. You know, I like trying to read the pitch. I like having a bit of banter with the bowler as he's coming. It's little things like that. It could be that all that sort of stuff is what Root likes. It could be that he is batting. But I remember when I did my, you know, my chapter in my book about, you know, top batters, like a lot of top batters, it's really, really clear what the motivation of that person is.
Yeah.
Right. Like Lara was immortality, right? Sachin Tendulkar was the next run. Ricky Ponting was winning a game, right? Kumar was proving his dad wrong. You know, whatever. Yeah. Everyone's got their thing, right? That, you know, that inspires them. And then there's a few guys where you're just like, I don't know. They're just really good at it. And so once you get to old age, you have to want to do it, because I promise you, I know he hasn't had a lot of interest in everything else. It's hard in your late 30s to be a professional athlete. And so if you don't want to do it, now you're all right. Maybe it is. He gets to a certain point, and maybe now he just goes, yeah, I think I'm going to go off and I'm going to play. I'm going to play until I break this record, which would be really interesting. But it's not as apparent with him as it is with the other Fab Four guys and a lot of great batters through history.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. You don't really know what Joe Root's motivation is. But if you know, that's one side of it, motivation, hunger, and all of that. Of course, there is the fitness side of things, which is perhaps even more important over here. But there's some good news over there for Root is basically, he's a superhero. He never gets injured. He's missed two tests since he's debuted for England, which is crazy considering that he was once upon a time an all-format player. And even right now, he's a multi-format player, right? He does still play ODI cricket. Who's to say how long he plays that format for?
Up until now.
Yeah. He was a multi-format player up until now. But, you know, if you think of it from his perspective, if he really wants to go for it, he could focus solely on red ball cricket. And that is a direction taken by former England cricketers as well, most recently Broad and Anderson. So Root could potentially do that for the remainder of his career, focus on test cricket. And that kind of elevates his chances of overtaking Sachin, because the workload can be managed somewhat.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, England have obviously, as you said, have done that before. The interesting thing with him is, he's never, like, even when they've tried to move him aside. So he kept trying to make the T20 side.
Yeah.
Right. And he thought he should have been in that.
Signed up for the IPL most recently and didn't get many games.
He signed up for the IPL. He played Big Bash 1 year as well. And I remember in 2018, I want to say, I think it was 2018 when they're in Sri Lanka, he spent as much time working on his bowling as Moeen Ali did, right? Mm. And that's not slagging off Moeen Ali. It's just that Joe Root was really working. And I remember Gareth Batty was working with TalkSport and Saqlain Mushtaq was there. And he was like bouncing ideas off both of them. And like, you know, I want to try this. Do you think this will work? And, you know, I want to spin it this way. And, you know, all these sorts of things. It was really, really interesting how much time he put into his bowling. So from that perspective, and it was, let's be honest, he wasn't doing that for, these weren't test deliveries, really. He was really preparing himself for, to get back into the T20 team and to be able to bowl two or three overs in a game. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, that's kind of how Joe Root is. So will he handle being just red ball cricket, right? And again, he's 34 and he's an incredible athlete and he's managed to be absolutely fine all the way through. But what happens when he's 37, 38, 39, and he's still playing as much cricket as he can, is that when that becomes more of an issue? But you're right. I think it's just a tough conversation with him because he doesn't want to do it. And I mean, they have to kind of just say, we're just not picking you for anything else, which is what they did in T20 cricket. And they might do in one day cricket, right? They did it to Jimmy Anderson. If they could do it to Jimmy Anderson, I kind of feel like they could do it to Joe Root as well.
I feel like that is the obvious thing to do at this point because 2027 is a long way away, right? And you want Joe Root to play as many tests as possible. And I mean, sure, he's only ever missed two test matches due to injury and is made of steel, but you don't want to jinx that either. I'm just going to knock on wood in case I haven't jinxed that. Another thing that augurs really well for Joe Root is the fact that if we look at runs per tests amongst batters with more than 10,000 runs in, obviously, this format, only Kumar Sangakkara, Brian Lara and Yunus Khanna are ahead of Root. So he does score a lot of runs per tests, and that does put him in good stead.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com. Yeah, it's a really interesting stat that I know that Brian Lara has the highest percentage of runs of any of the players we looked at for our book. So the top 80 test players or batters of all time. And he has the highest percentage of runs per innings, which is, it's like, that's an interesting stat. What does that mean? It basically means no one else made runs in your games. And Kumar Sangakkara, you know, they had Mahela and they occasionally had Dilshan and everyone else, but they had a bit of a thin batting lineup at times overall. And who's the other player you had up in that list? Was it Yunus?
Yunus was at number three. So Sangha was one, Lara was two, Yunus was three, and Root is four.
And the other thing is that I think England have batted twice a lot in that period, right? They don't have the sort of thing that Australia, India, or the great South African sides had, or the great New Zealand sides, right? Of batting once, making 600, and then getting your bowlers to do the work on either side, right? That England hasn't had a side like that because they don't have anyone else to make runs.
Yeah.
So he probably, like for a number four, he's probably going to bat a lot more just because he hasn't always had a strong top order and because England usually have to bat twice. So those little things sometimes help quite a lot because I wasn't expecting him to be that high, really. He's a number four and he's in a, you know, I'm not saying England have been great under his all the time, but they haven't been terrible. But then when you think about it, the thing that they've specifically been terrible at is top order batting.
Yeah.
And so that probably does mean that he has an element of that, holding him back a little bit.
Yeah. Interesting you mentioned that because I was looking at Joe Root's breakdown by position in Test cricket, right? And it turns out that out of 267 innings in the format, 59 have come at number three. And that's obviously because England they've had a frail top order in the past. And he averaged just under 40 in that particular role. He's also opened the innings 11 times, right? And I think that was once in Australia as well. And he averaged 41.7, you know, opening the batting. Now, surely that record would have looked better if England hadn't experimented all this much and just given him that number four position throughout.
Yeah, and again, that comes back to why he's probably made so many runs per test, right? Because they haven't been very good. And he's also had to fight fires in a way that Sachin probably never had to. I think it's actually one other thing I would say is really interesting. Someone mentioned this maybe on a wagon wheel recently of it's quite interesting when you look at the fact that Joe Root had Alistair Cook and Sachin Tendulkar had Rahul Dravid. Like, if you have someone dead batting a spot or two ahead of you, it actually does really help those sorts of players. Like, it's much easier to build that incredible record, and Ponting had Hayden and Langer and, Lara's the guy that probably stands out as someone a little bit different because he didn't have that. But yes, I think Williamson's been a number three since birth, right?
Yep.
Smith can probably bat number three or number four interchangeably in a way that a lot of number threes can't. But he's probably his favorite position is number four, but he's probably a natural number three as well. And you look at Kohli, and his position is obviously a lot more set. Root's really the only one of them that massively throughout their peak anyway moved around the order because the batting around them wasn't good enough, right?
Yeah.
And that does destabilize you. And I also think that Williamson could probably bat four without too many issues. Smith, obviously, three and four can handle both of those. And Kohli could bat three and four without too many issues, right? If that's what you needed from him. Maybe he would struggle a little bit like Root has at three on occasionally. But I still think he could probably work it out. And it didn't quite work for Root. And so you have that destability then. There's this really interesting thing that happens in the 1950s in England, 1950s, 1960s, where they have all these incredible batters. It's like Ken Barrington, Dennis Compton still playing. They have Ted, God, I've got his book here, Ted, whatever his name is. There's heaps of them. There's like six or seven guys, Peter May, all these different guys over this period of about 10, 15 years. And almost none of them ever bat in the same position from one game to the other. And you look at their records, and a lot of them are quite clearly should have batted at number five, and some of them should have batted at number three and whatever. And it's a really interesting one because I don't think batting positions always matter all that much when it comes to, like, I think there should be fluidity in the batting positions. But I also think that if you tell a player that they are coming in and they're batting number three one game, and then they're batting number six the next game, then they're batting number five, that causes issues. Yep. And then there's the other thing of Virat Kohli and Joe Root's skills are probably much more suited to batting number four than they are number three.
Yeah.
Especially Root. I would say Root much more than Virat. I think Virat probably would have been a great number three, you know, if they needed that of him as well. But Root's skills are really almost perfectly set up to be number four. He can play pace good enough that it's not an issue, but he doesn't really like it when the ball's hard and it's nipping around. It's not what his technique is made for, back foot player, right? And he's a brilliant player of spin. So you want him to bat at four so that he's more likely to come in when there's a spinner on more often. And so the fluidity of batting numbers is slightly different because really what you're talking about is role there. And they put him into a role that didn't really suit his skill set and he didn't quite nail, right? Most great players throughout history, the batting order revolves around them, not the other way around. And, you know, you see Shivner and Chandrapal still batting down the order, where it's just like, well, no, I'm the best number five in the world. Why on earth would I go anywhere else? And so in Root's case, and you look at Kohli. As I said, I think Kohli probably could have been a really good number three, and he's done it. I'm just having a look now. He's done it six times. Yeah. He just hasn't had to, right? They've had other players that can do that. England have not. And so Root has to go up the order. And the only thing that is comparable is probably late stage Steve Smith with this whole opening the batting thing and everything else. But to be honest, again, that's Steve Smith offering to do that.
Exactly.
Right?
That's his choice. Whereas Root never really wanted that role. But, you know, England, you know, were, as you said, firefighting at times to just kind of, you know, make that batting order make sense.
And I think people have forgotten just how bad that top three was.
Yeah. I mean, all those different opening partners that Alastair Cook had, right? If we were to name them, we should do a quick picks on them, honestly. There's a definite quick picks idea.
I mean, I wonder what percentage of England fans would remember Stoneman.
True.
You know what I mean?
Like, or Alex Lees.
Alex Lees. Adam Lyth?
Yes.
Right? You know, even someone like Michael Carberry, maybe because he was in an Ashes, gets a little bit of memory, right? You know, how many people could tell you that, you know, Jason Roy and Alex Hales opened the bat? Yeah. Like,
Haseeb Hameed was around for a bit, right?
Joe Denley. Like, I mean, you know, all these sorts of random names that played a little bit and then disappeared. And that's why Joe Root had to go up the order. And there's also an argument, right, of... And this was the argument made at the time, which was he might as well be batting at number three anyway because they're losing so many wickets at the top and he's coming in earlier. I don't think mathematically that argument ever works because you would need to be losing a wicket every like 30 balls in order for the number four to be coming in at a similar stage of a number three somewhere else. But I also understand the emotional argument of that, which does make sense, right? Which is, what's the point of me batting at number four if it's 20 for two when I come in, or if it's 12 for two when I come in? So I do understand all that, but it's a fascinating one. And clearly it was probably part of the reason that his average tanked for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite positive. There's no way to prove this obviously, but I mean, if I had to bet money on it, I would bet on Joe Root having even better numbers right now if, you know, they haven't mucked up his batting order or position in the batting order. Anyway, we've talked about fitness. We've talked about motivation. There is obviously a question of form in this as well, right? And you just mentioned how England have struggled to find test batters of Root's quality. So a drop in form won't trigger Baz and Stokes to, you know, move on from Root. Root would, for instance, get a longer rope than most if that is to happen, like a catastrophic drop in form, and they would back him. But if you look at his career overall, you know, he's had seven years where he has been a plus batter in Test cricket. And he's only had a three-year dip over there in his late 20s, which you also mentioned. So that does, you know, encourage the idea that maybe he can, you know, cross Sachin, because he's never really had extremely poor years apart from like a couple.
Yeah, and even a couple of those, I think they were like average years, right? Yeah. Like I don't think they were absolutely horrendous. And some of them were him batting at number three. I think, I was just having a look at it while you were chatting there. I think there are like three different periods of his career where he batted at number three. So it wasn't even like they gave him number three and he stayed there for ages.
Yeah.
I think if you, the consistency of his batting is a really, really important one. And the player that I compared him to was Ricky Ponting, because yeah. Ricky Ponting's number two on the list. And Ricky Ponting essentially comes in as this young wonder kid, obviously has a, you know, great first test, but he actually struggled for the first 3 or 4 years of Test cricket. I remember he batted first drop for Australia against the West Indies at one stage and like made runs, but they were so horrendous that they ended up moving him back down the order. Mm. Now, everyone knew how good Ricky Ponting was, but he did struggle. And then suddenly peak Ricky Ponting happened, and it was maybe one of the greatest peaks we've ever seen. And then you read his book and he's quite honest of going, yeah, I should have retired. I can't remember what year he says, but I should have retired at this year, because like now looking back on it, I wasn't anywhere near my best. And, you know, his average is again, high 50s and drops all the way down. Right?
And he's not the only player, Jared, in history whose average has tanked, right? You've got players like Gordon Greenidge and Javed Miadad as well,
yep.
who were all great batters of their time. And they're all remembered as legends. And, you know, they had... You know, their average docked off towards the end of their careers. In the final years, there was a regression. Kohli and Smith are going through something similar currently, but maybe they can turn it around, right? Because they're still active. Exactly. So it's not like, it's a phenomena that a lot of great players have kind of had to endure. And a lot of this, I feel, will depend on how Root's body holds up, right? Because form is kind of linked to that.
Yeah, and I think... what we're really talking about, we can coin this phrase now, I just came up with it in my head, but there's a legend tax on batting. Right. So if you're a great player, but not a legend, right? So if you're under Gordon Greenidge or Javed Miadad or Ricky Ponting or Joe Root, and your form starts to taper off, right? Let's say you're the second best batter in your side, or the third best batter in your side, or the fourth best batter, but you're still, you know, right up there. Chances are you're going to be pushed out. Right. So Simon Caddick was magnificent towards the end of his career. But they had Ponting and they had Hussey. And Simon Caddick was one that was dropped. And Ponting and Hussey both struggled at the end of their careers. And so their averages actually end up being lower than they probably would have if they'd been dropped at the time when clearly they were done. But how do you drop players of that level, right? You can drop Simon Caddick, right? You know, you can drop that level of player very, very easily. You can't drop Ponting or Greenidge or Miadad and these sorts of people. And I think there's an element of that there. And you're right of that was so we know that it could happen. We know that.
Sorry to interject, but Alistair Cook is another fine example of this. Sure, he scored a ton in his final test match, but why did the retirement conversation even come up? Because Alistair Cook had been mediocre for a bit, and he was only 33 years old. That is exactly how old Joe Root is right now. Only difference is that Joe Root is actually experiencing a purple patch, whereas Alistair Cook was dipping.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so you're right. You then have that whole idea of we are used to batters tailing off, right? Of not doing it. Now we've seen the opposite too. We've seen Kumar Sangakkara, who in the last year of international cricket, I don't know what his test numbers were, but I reckon I saw him make 28 straight hundreds in the World Cup when I was covering him.
It was four straight hundreds.
Was it four? Yeah. And then he went off to Surrey and averaged some ridiculous number. So we've had that. We've had Graham Gooch is another really good example of someone who was an average batter throughout most of his career and then a great batter from 32 onwards, basically, right?
Yeah.
You know, so we have had players like that, but the vast majority don't do that, right? There is a natural curve down and sometimes it's really stark. And for legends, it is so hard to drop someone who is of that quality. I mean, you even look at the last few years of Sachin, he had a couple of years around, 35, 36, where he dips off, right?
Yeah, so and then I have those numbers in front of me actually right now. After the 175 test mark, Sachin was, 38-ish? And by that time, you know, he had still been averaging around 57 in test cricket, which is phenomenal. But when he reached his 200th test, which is like 25 tests and, you know, 2-3 years later, he was averaging under 54 as opposed to 57. And of course, he played till 40, right? But that also suggests that Root will really have to cash in on this next 3 to 4 year period, because post 38, things could get grim.
This is brought to you by HitWicket, the cricket game that has playing and strategy all in your pocket. That's the thing. We don't know when he's going to start to age, is I suppose what we're trying to say here. And so with Ricky Ponting, what we know is Ricky Ponting probably has a higher, well, he has the highest peak, I think, of any major batter of all time, outside of someone like Bradman, but Bradman missed a lot of his peak. But if you look at between the age of 28 and 33, I think Ponting made the most runs, or the second most runs in that period, at the highest average, and it was way higher than everyone else's. So we know that Ponting was like a completely different player. But before and after that, he wasn't that. I think Root is much more of a Tendulkar player. He obviously didn't start as early as Tendulkar, but as far as he's a consistent run scorer all the way through his career. He wasn't just great when he was in his peak years. That usually bodes pretty well, because I think if you can conquer test cricket when you're young, right, it probably means that you have a technique that works for it all the way through. You're not waiting for your mind and your body to mature in the way that Ponting clearly was. And so that should age prettier than Greenwich and what happened to me and Dad and what happened to Ponting, right? But the truth is that I just threw me and Dad in that. No one's ever had a batting brain like Javed me and Dad, right? Absolute genius. But clearly in his late 30s, something happened to Javed me and Dad physically. And he didn't have the pace to move around the crease. He wasn't picking the ball up as early, whatever it may be. And he completely drops off. He's one of the most interesting technicians we've ever had in cricket. And yet he couldn't make runs at the end of his career really at all, right? So we don't know that won't happen to Ricky Ponting. Ponting? We did happen to Ricky Ponting. We don't know that won't happen to Joe Root.
Yeah.
And you don't know how a player is going to age. I think Root is set up to age really well because he never gets injured. He's always at the non-striker's end. So two things that are really, really important from that point of view. And his technique is uncluttered.
Yeah.
And it's a very simple technique. But we don't know, right? We don't know how these things are going to go. And as you said before, Alistair Cook's batting was pretty simple, right? Like he just blocked balls, and then occasionally he would play a pull shot and he'd nudge the ball off his hip and he didn't go out to spin very much. And yet by 33, he felt cooked.
Hmm.
So you don't know when that age is going to catch up with you. And that's the really big unknown there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that checks out. And you also mentioned his skill set, right? You've mentioned it twice now, and it's pretty damn good when you look at Joe Root as a test batter, because he's not perturbed versus pace or spin. In fact, he's a brilliant pair of spin, and which is why the number four position really suits him. And we've mentioned this on a fair few podcasts in the past as well, that he might just be one of the best rotators of strike in history, right?
Yeah.
All of those things go in his favor with respect to overtaking Sachin, but it's really the FTP that will dictate that, right? Because up until 2027, England, according to their FTP schedule, are, you know, penciled in to play 28 more tests. And that's not counting a potential berth in a World Test Championship final or those random tests that England, you know, have a tendency might to play.
In.
Yeah. They usually do that. They'll play a couple of tests or, you know, a series or two outside the World Test Championship cycle. Given that Root, you know, if we assume he plays all of these test matches, he gets to 174 tests in his career at the age of 36. He should be within touching distance of Sachin's tally if his form persists by, let's say, 185 to 190 test matches, as per the math that you, Varun and Shayan did, the projections that you carried out. So it's a big if, right? And there are lots of, you know, factors in there, injury, and then you've got motivation, and then you've got form. But it also seems fairly realistic that Root will end up playing all of these 28 test matches, right?
Yeah, I've got, unless something massive happens, and who knows where Joe Root is emotionally and everything else, but unless something massively happens, I kind of expect him to play until 2027. Hmm. That's not the bit that I think is interesting. I think it's the bit after that. right? And mm-hmm. and I do think that is interesting. And the other thing is, you know, when you talk about the maths that we did, basically what I said to Varun and Cheyenne was, what we need to work out is what the natural degradation of a player by year is, right?
Yeah.
Because he is going to, unless he completely Graham Gooches himself, chances are he's going to make a lot fewer runs the longer he goes, right? And it's also possible, especially with his skill set we talked about before, which is perfect to play when he's old. But if you think about him, there's also a chance as he gets older that he could bat at number five, which means, again, he would make fewer runs. Doesn't happen as much in modern cricket. It did happen to Ponting. So we have seen it of recent times, a player dropping down one spot. But that could happen as well, right? And so with all those things, 2027 doesn't seem that far away with everything we know about him. But we're talking about we're still talking about a few years after that before he gets to that real, like at what point does it get close? It's probably within 1500 runs when you start to think to yourself.
Well, so I looked at your projections, right? And I completely get the whole degradation of a batter with age thing. And you guys came to the golden number of 200 tests, which is, you know, ironically, the exact amount of tests that Sachin Tendulkar has also played. And
Let's just stop on that for a minute. You have no idea how annoyed I was that we did all this work. The theory that we put into this was so full on, and then we came up with the exact number that Sachin took. It was the most annoying thing I'd ever done in analysis, because if it's 199, everyone's like, well, then they've clearly done that. Well, the minute you say it's 200, everyone's like, well, they probably just took Sachin's number.
Well, I can understand it must have been really frustrating, but I'm here challenging you on that number, and hear me out, okay? Let's suppose that Joe Root continues his good form and in the next 30 test matches, all right? So a little after the end of that cycle that you guys, the 2027 FTP cycle, right? So 30 test matches, let's suppose he scores around 80 runs per test, right? He is now less than 1,000 runs away from Sachin. I feel like at that point, Root is like, okay, you know what? I've got another 1,000 runs in me. I can go for it. And maybe he gets there around the 185, 190 test match mark. That's just me kind of hypothesizing.
I think you're not factoring in what should happen, which is there should be a year to 18 months where he struggles to make test runs over the age of 35. Just because it's happened to the greatest players of all time. And then you're also not factoring in the other option, which is, he's going to get to a certain age where he's not going to be able to score 80 runs a test match consistently. You're not factoring in he might slip down to number five. You're not factoring in that they might get better as a side, and maybe, I don't know, Harry Brook becomes a superstar, and Zach Crawley becomes the player they hope that he is, and they find a couple of other players and they don't have to bat twice as much, right? That's why this is so hard to work out. And the truth is, I think what you're doing is what Ponting did, which is, well, this is how many runs he's made.
I'm looking at best case scenario, obviously.
Yeah. And look, best case scenario, he could do it really, really quick, right? Like, I mean, at the moment, he's making 100 every time he farts. So, you know, if he kept doing that, it's just the entire history of cricket, and even of the greatest batters of all time, tells us there is usually a regression. And there usually is a slowing down. And sometimes you don't, as I said before, sometimes it's not even that your average dips, it's that your runs per game dips because you move down one spot in the order, right? And, you know, you have that sort of Alan Border, Clive Lloyd sort of thing that happens as you get into your late 30s, where it's like, maybe they should be batting six, right? Like, how far further down the order can we push these guys? Because if they're batting at six, they'll still get us a good average, but they won't make as many runs per game. So I do think there's an element of all of that happening that I don't think you can discount. If you're just looking at from, 2020 to now, and projecting that the next 4 years he averaged the same, I mean, then he would probably be far closer to Sachin far earlier on.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be spectacular to watch if his next 4 years are as good as his last 4 years, but I expect his next 4 years to be about 80% as good as his last 4 years.
I mean, he's got an Ashes coming up in Australia, and he's got
where India he's never touring. Made run.
Yeah. India is touring England next year, and he's probably going to have to face Bumrah. So those aren't easy tasks. He really has to cash in on this Pakistan series, honestly, if we're being real, that's coming up.
And the Pakistan series could be the sort of thing, and New Zealand series might be another one where he makes a lot of runs, right? He might just be that happens. It also might be that he fails in the Ashes and he fails against India, and that sort of back-to-back thing makes him think, oh, is this worth it anymore? And all of those things have to be thought about and put together. It is more than possible that he's, because of the level of player he is, that he scores runs for the next 4 years at that rate that you just said. I just think everything I've seen about great players, it usually doesn't work that way. And we're talking about, how old was he when he made his debut? Was he 20 or 21?
He made it in December 2012. So that would make him 21, I believe. 21 going on 22.
I just think playing Test cricket from 21 to 38, the amount of games England play specifically, I can't believe he's not going to degrade. Right?
He needs to go to Jimmy Anderson's dietitian.
Yeah, and that is the one thing that I would say is in your favor is the idea of he just becomes a red ball specialist. But I even if he does that, I think there's going to be some sort of slipping down of him as a player in that period. But it doesn't mean that I think 200 is the most likely. If he's going to play on and he makes 200 tests, that is the most likely number. It could be 195. It could be 205. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen to Joe Root. And the reason we don't have no idea is a couple of years ago, Akash Chopra wasn't sure he should be in the Fab Four anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like, what if he goes back to that level?
True.
Right? Like, it's very possible from here, he could play for another 5 years and he might average 39, right? England's not going to drop someone for the next 5 years who averages 39, and they're certainly not going to drop a legend who does that. And if that's the case, he might end up batting at number five and averaging 72 runs per test match or 75 runs per test match.
There are obviously so many variables over here, but you'd have to say, taking everything into account that we've, you know, spoken of in this podcast, the three which really stand out are motivation, fitness, and form, right? Now, which factor do you think could potentially hinder Root the most in his quest of becoming the leading run scorer in test history? And if you were to, you know, suggest someone who was betting money on this, would you say that, you know, it's a safe bet to go for Root as top scorer?
Yeah, it'd be actually quite interesting to talk to people like Rob Barron and see what they would do. But I would say that I would bet against it rather than betting on it if it was up to me. Because the likelihood of injury and, you know, when you get older is so much higher.
So that's the biggest factor then, according to you?
No, but you can't ever discount that. I think the biggest factor is I don't know if he wants to do it.
And so motivation wins for you.
Yeah, I don't think you can. It needs to be, he needs to be literally, I'm going to play until I break this record. And that is my aim. I'm going to win as many test matches as I can along the way, but I want to play long enough that I can break this record. And if he isn't, if that isn't in his head, any day he could wake up when he's 36, 37, 38 and just be like, I'm done. What a career. You know, no one's ever done this for England before. You know, he goes past Ricky Ponting and he's like, I'm second highest run scorer of all time. Never thought I was going to do that as a kid. I'm more than done. I don't know what his motivation is when it comes to that. Whereas if this was reverse and Joe Root had the record and Sachin Tendulkar was the guy coming up for the record, I'd be like, I know what that motivation is. That motivation is going to be the highest run scorer of all time. And I think that, so I've then got two pretty big clouds. I'm not as worried about form because I don't think he'll be dropped. And I just think he could average 40 up until a very late age, even if he drops off. But if he starts to pick up, you know, old man injuries like backs and fingers and calves that a lot of old batters get, that's going to slow him down. And then I just don't know if he's desperate to make this record. And if he comes out tomorrow, does a press conference, go, do you know what? It is, I want to win every test match I can from England from here on in. I want to play as long as possible. And I want to do that while trying to break the record. I think that would change my view on it a bit.
Well, only time will tell, I suppose. I would want to feel optimistic. I've got this weird feeling in my gut that he probably will get there. But of course, that is all conjecture at this point because all of the issues have been discussed, you know, at length in this podcast. So Jared would bet against it. I would bet, you know, in favor. You guys should let us know in the comment section below what you think will happen, right? Will Root surpass Sachin? Will he call it a day earlier? What sort of motivation do you think he has? Will injury play a role? What sort of form can we expect? Like, we want to know all of your thoughts. So let us know in the comment section below. And also, just a quick reminder to everybody that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. It can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. That wraps this up then. Let's see, Jared, where Joe Root's career ends up. Maybe we'll revisit this topic after the Pakistan series. But that is all for now. If you guys enjoyed this episode, do give us a like, share it with your friends, and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. We'll see you on Footmark soon enough. We have a bunch of episodes lined up. And it'll all be random, as promised earlier. So some weeks you'll get 2 Footmarks. Some week there'll be no Footmarks. But we'll be giving you, you know, grade A content on your screens on the regular. So yeah, have a good one, guys. Enjoy yourselves, and we'll see you soon enough. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.